It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And it's been this kind of offseason so far. We are excited about having Jay Bruce to talk about. That's about where we're at, and that's all right. But it's also the truth. So there are a couple of interesting things about this, and one is sort of just the broad question of what we make about Jay Bruce. But a more specific one that I do want to touch on first is that it sounds like he's going to be playing some first base, and that has a couple of different implications. One, potentially somewhat for Bruce's value, but to me, the more interesting question about this, and maybe the most interesting question about this, regards Dominic Smith. Here's the thing. The Mets have kind of a numbers crunch issue, and the talk all along had been to sort of get a platoon partner for Dominic Smith, to get somebody who could take some of the burden off him against tough lefties, play a little bit of outfield, and basically kind of be a multi-position piece. What the Mets have done instead, if Bruce is going to play first base, is pick up somebody who might eat much more directly into Dominic Smith's at-bats. So I guess we'll talk about Jay Bruce in a moment, but I kind of want to start by talking about Smith and what this says to you, Fred, about where you would rank Smith going into the 2018 season.
I actually think this probably takes him off all mixed league draft lists. I think, once Michael Conforto's healthy, if everybody's healthy, which I know is a bit of an if, but if at any point they have Cespedes, Conforto, and Bruce has to play first base, I guess, unless they're going to go back to looking at one of those players at center field. Bruce probably has to play first base, though, which I think this kind of sends a message that maybe they don't think Smith is ready to really help them. That was kind of the impression I got from this, especially when they mentioned him playing first base. And this wasn't the first time they were, the Mets had been linked to free agent first baseman at different points in the offseason, so I'm getting the feeling that they just don't think he's necessarily the answer, or at least not the answer they want to run with right now, which means with first base being so deep right now in fantasy, I just think he's not a mixed league option. He's someone you draft later in an NL-only league and hope that somehow he comes into 400 at-bats, but I don't know if that's going to happen.
And this raises the other question, or you raise the other question, I should say. I don't think anybody was overly confident about Conforto. We're hopeful about Conforto. He was really good when he played last year, but, I don't think anybody was terribly, I don't think confident was really the word you'd use, just because it was a pretty significant injury, and there was reason to worry. But does this in any way up your worry meter regarding Conforto? I mean, it's a three-year deal, so this was a strategic decision more than a tactical decision to make. To sign Jay Bruce to 3 years is not necessarily something you do because Conforto is going to be out a month longer than you thought. At the same time, does it raise your worry meter on Conforto at all? Does it affect, if you're drafting right now, and look, we'll know more when we get to spring training. If you're drafting right now, does it affect where you rate Conforto?
To me, it doesn't change it. I think Conforto's just kind of his own issue because to me, the trickle-down is how the Mets probably view Smith. So I'm thinking the Mets sign Bruce thinking he can play right field until Conforto's ready. Once Conforto's ready, he goes to first base because we don't really, really care what happens to Smith as far as if we need to put Smith back in AAA for a while until, we have another injury and everything. So I don't think the Bruce signing, like you said, it's a three-year deal. There is an opening at first base where they don't have an established starter. So I think Conforto's still kind of his own issue. I don't think, to me, this doesn't really send a message that they're worried about Conforto more so. I mean, we were already worried about Conforto for 2018, but it doesn't up my worry up for him.
And so then the final question is where do you rate Jay Bruce? What do you make of Jay Bruce back in New York where he had a pretty good year last year, had sort of a good Jay Bruce year? He was, he's more or less the same guy in Cleveland, actually, if you look at it. Mm-hmm. Where do you rate him? I think it's probably hard to project him to repeat 36-101, given that he had never hit 36 before and had only driven in 101 once before. But if I give you something like 250, 30, and 90, You think that's reasonable? You think that's optimistic? Where do you, how do you see Bruce going into 18?
So I was, before you said that last sentence, I was just about to say 30 and 90. That's kind of where I see him. I often end up owning Jay Bruce. I don't know if I'm a big Jay Bruce fan. I feel like he's a little undervalued in fantasy circles just because, I don't know, I think he's just one of those players who kind of just is who he is. He doesn't ever grow. He's kind of the same guy he was 7 or 8 years ago. There are more power hitters now, so I get that that makes him a little less valuable. I think that he's definitely in the second half of mixed league drafts because of the fact that there are just a lot of power hitters out there, and he's not going to be a high average hitter. He's not going to give you any speed. That being said, the one thing Bruce is, after we talked about Conforto, is Bruce is really durable. He has one DL stint since 2010. So you can probably count on him to get you those 530 to 550 at-bats, 30 home runs, probably about 90 RBIs. I don't really like the lineup. City Field's also not an awesome park to hit home runs in, but I don't really like the Mets lineup. Are you more optimistic by chance on them than I am? But I just feel like it's Cespedes could be really good, but he's injury-prone, and then beyond that, I just see a lot more questions than answers.
No, I agree. I have a lot of worries about that lineup. They kind of made it a priority last year, and they really thought, hey, we're going to hit. It kind of more or less came together all right, but they hit. Pitching was more of a problem for them than the lineup was. But, yeah, I think it's hard to project that as a particularly good lineup. I don't see it as a dire lineup, but I don't think it's a lineup that is going to add value to guys for fantasy.
Yeah, I think for the Mets to have, say, an above-average lineup this season, maybe even average, Amed Rosario has to really hit the ground running this year and be really special maybe at the top of their lineup. Cespedes has to stay healthy, and Conforto has to get back in fairly short order. If all those things happen, I think it could be have a nice top of the lineup, Rosario and some combination of Conforto, Cespedes, and Bruce. But even then, the bottom of the lineup doesn't look great, and that's a lot of ifs with Rosario and with Conforto.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They're interesting because pretty much every spot in the lineup that is somebody who is either really promising or at some point in the not-too-distant past has been very good. I mean, even a catcher, we've talked a lot about Travis d'Arnaud. He's a guy who his best is pretty doggone good. I mean, Rosario is exciting. All of the outfielders have at various times been productive. So, you know, you can see... If you really want to squint, if you really want to look at this as and see the best Mets lineup, the best Mets lineup is pretty good. It's just that, like you note, there's an awful lot of things that have to go right to get even 75% of the best Mets lineup.
Totally, and throw in a massive range of outcomes for that starting pitching staff, and the Mets as a team might have the biggest range of possible records next season of any team in baseball.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And speaking of teams that are kind of hard to figure in a couple of years removed from being really good, the Toronto Blue Jays. Mark Shapiro was on MLB Network recently and was really upfront about the fact that they are looking at versatility and they are looking at guys who can cover them in the event that Troy Tulowitzki and Devin Travis are not regular guys, are guys that they just need to cover for a lot. They'd already added Diaz at that point. They have now added Solarte. They're basically putting their money where their mouth is, and it makes sense. So, the question you asked me in our notes was, does this downgrade Travis and Tulowitzki? And to me, it doesn't really, because we kind of knew. We've seen this for a while. I'm on record. We've talked about Travis a lot. I love the player. The best player he can be is really good. But at this point, he really is a prove-it guy. And Tulowitzki, it's been a while since he was really even most of the guy that we saw several years back. So, to me, where I look at those two guys is Tulo is a guy who's got to prove it, for me at this point, even performance-wise. Travis does not need to prove it performance-wise, just health. So Travis is a guy I will have my eye on as a sleeper, as a guy who, if he plays, could be really good. I'm not even sure I see that for Tulo. Where are you on those two guys?
Yeah, I agree with you on Tulo. I think there's just so much more name value there now than there is production. In a 15-team league, I would draft him. Anything shallower than that, I wouldn't. The Solarte trade did make me downgrade Travis in my mind just a little bit, and the reason is okay, the odds of Travis landing on the DL at times next season are very high. However, when you draft him late in your draft, you may hope that you can get a stretch of good performances out of him before that happens. I wonder if the Jays will try to use Solarte at second base once or twice, a couple times a week. That was more my thinking, to try to keep Travis fresh and keep him from going on the DL. That's nice for the Blue Jays, but it's not great for fantasy. In fantasy, you'd actually rather have him hit well and play every day for 3 months and then miss the rest of the season and you move on to someone else than have him be a four-game-a-week player. That could, with his limited, he doesn't have a lot of power or speed, so if he dropped down to a four-game-a-week player, that would make him then not someone you'd want to consider in mixed leagues. And I wonder, that seems like a sensible thing for the Jays to do is try to pace him out this year.
I see that. I think what I would say about that is if Travis is the guy that I hope he will be and think he can be, then I think they'll have a really hard time sitting him once or twice a week for Solarte just for maintenance purposes. If he hits like he has at times, and again, like I think he's capable of doing, that's a team that's going to need him in the lineup. And it's only going to be a couple of times before John Gibbons gets really tired of, so why isn't Travis playing? I think if he's productive, he'll play. And it's easy to say you're going to give a guy maintenance days. But if a guy's not 37, I don't think that's real likely to happen. I understand the idea. I just think in practicality, it's unlikely. The other thing I keep seeing, and you would know more about this than I, is some sort of talk about maybe Travis moving off of second base, that either by DHing or playing some outfield, they might save him some wear and tear. I'm not sure I buy that for outfield in particular. I think changing a position is its own injury risk. But what's your read on the possibility of Travis playing somewhere other than second base?
Yeah, there does seem to be the talk of him possibly playing left field. I view that like you do. I kind of view it as more smoke than fire for right now. And like I kind of have the mindset, I'll believe it when I really hear it from John Gibbons' mouth or see him running around in the outfield in spring training, then I would put a little more stock into it. But the Blue Jays also still have some outfield options. Like, they still have Steve Pearce for another season, Teoscar Hernandez. They're hoping to give a really long look this year. Solarte can play some outfield. So I feel like Travis probably stays at second base right now. Also, to add to your point on Travis, the Blue Jays lineup, when you still look at it, the glaring need in that lineup is still a leadoff hitter. Like, Travis is maybe by default the only candidate they have right now to hit leadoff. Russell Martin's not a leadoff hitter. Kevin Pillar can't get on base enough. If Travis is hitting well, he could be their leadoff hitter, which you're right, would totally clear him from any problems with Solarte. If he's not playing as well and he's hitting seventh or eighth, because he's not the kind of guy who hits in the middle of the lineup, then fans in the media may not, you know, be so aware if he sits sometimes, although at that point you might not want him for a mixed league either.
And then that's kind of what I'm getting at. I think if he's the kind of guy that you're sitting they're sitting once or twice a week, then you probably don't really care that much unless you're in, you know, an AL only. If we're talking about mixed league drafts here, I think that if he's a guy that's worth having in a mixed league, then he's a guy who's going to be playing regularly.
Yeah. So boomer bust kind of last round pick, grab him, throw him on your bench, and see if 2 weeks into the season he's the leadoff hitter and playing every day. And if he's hitting 260 and batting seventh, then you just let him go.
Yep. Weird, interesting little three-way trade last week for name value, the main thing is that Joaquin Soria ends up with the White Sox. Is he going to close there?
I think he probably is. And I know what we spend, and so does everyone who analyzes fantasy. I know we spend a lot of time trying to get inside managers' heads. That being said, when I try to do that one more time, I feel like Soria has a lot of closing experience. When I compare him to the alternatives, Juan Manaea has very little major league experience and closing experience. Nate Jones is hurt, is probably the most talented of them, but is often injured. They could pump up Soria's trade value by having him close in the first half of the season and then possibly flipping him to another team. I just think that, to me, out of the three options, he's the one that I would rather take late in my draft. But they're all dart throws a little bit at this point. So do you see it the same way, or do you think that Manaea or Jones are maybe more likely than Soria?
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think if you look, January, we'll know more. I'll say this a bunch of times over the next month or so. We'll know a lot more once not only do managers start deploying their players in spring training games, but once the beat reporters start asking the managers these questions every day. But, you know, right now, kind of trying to read tea leaves and looking at, you know, what makes sense for the White Sox. I think you hit on it. Look, this is not a team that has any realistic expectations of seriously contending this year. They are in the middle of a long rebuild. And so the thing that makes the most sense for them in the long term is exactly what you noted, is to get to have Soria at the end of the game, have a guy that you can comfortably trot out there, build up his trade value, you know, probably trade him at the deadline if he comes into the deadline with 20 saves. And while we're at it, let's not forget, saves make young pitchers more expensive. And so, you know, the other part of that is that you save money in arbitration next year by not giving save opportunities to a guy who's you're going to be having to determine a price for. So I think all of that adds up to, I think it's a fairly common strategy that we've seen with rebuilding teams is, you know, don't spend huge on a stud closer. Don't go out and sign Kenley Jansen. I'm not talking about that. But find an experienced guy. You put in the ninth inning, you let him get some saves, you let your young pitchers, you sort them out in the middle innings, and you figure out what you've got, and you develop them that way, and then you flip the closer. I mean, we've seen a lot of teams do that, and I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't have a ton of faith that if Soria is their opening good day closer that he'll hold the role for four months.
Also,
I mean,
that.
he may not. I mean, his ERAs the last 2 years have basically been around four. That being said, like, if I look at his career, his career 286 ERA, he generally does a pretty good job of keeping the ball in the yard. He could be an O, like, unless there's some sort of skills deterioration that's not correctable, I think he could be an okay closer for round 20 something in your draft or a dollar at your auction. And, you know, and you're ready to jump off very quickly if you need to, yeah. But you give him a shot and maybe you do get the maybe it's Fernando Rodney last year all over again and you get a lot more than you bargained for.
And then the other piece here, of course, is that he leaves Kansas City and seems to clarify things a little. Does that affect your valuation of Herrera at all, or are you pretty confident in him either way?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident in him. I don't see the Royals, the track they're on right now, as being a track where you add bullpen pieces because they've lost so many core hitters and haven't replaced them. So I think Herrera is probably their guy. I know they have Brandon Maurer, too, if Herrera slips up a bit. And there are some concerns about Herrera. I'll say that I would rather own Herrera than Soria. I have a little more faith in him than Soria. So if I was tiering closers, I would put him one tier higher. I wouldn't put him in the top two, or maybe I would put him in the third tier, kind of 17th or 18th among closers. Do you have more faith in Herrera than Soria, or are you a little lower?
I like the pitcher more, and I like the security a little more.
Yeah, definitely. And at least he's done the role. Interesting, as I scroll through the two of them, they have identical career ERAs and nearly identical career whips. But I do think Herrera is a little closer to his prime than Soria, who I think is probably a little past it now.
We will move on and talk sleepers in just a moment here. But before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is a podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut Four section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. We really think you will enjoy it. If you are a podcast listener, a baseball fan, it'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode debated which MLB player is having the most fun this offseason and put forth some truly outlandish baseball predictions for 2018. If that sounds like something you're into, search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. That would be outlandish predictions as opposed to my dumb predictions, of which I will surely make a few in the next week. They are never dumb. They are smart, they are silly, they are fun, and they are worth your time. I am a Cut 4 fan.
It's a good time of year for it, too. I mean,
yes.
We're lighter on baseball-related podcasts this time of year. It's a good chance to check out some of these ones that maybe, you know, like, say, hardcore fantasy owners who are listening to us in January maybe don't check out the lighter side type podcasts like this very often. This is a good time of year to try it. You might find out that you like it more than you thought you would.
So we are more or less back to a weekly format now that we are counting ahead to next season instead of looking back to last season. And with the light transaction load and the newly increased frequency, that allows us time to explore a few deeper dives here. So we're going to talk sleepers. We're going to talk late-round guys, sleepers, guys who, you know, when we start building up to the season in a few weeks, people who have been with us for a few years know we will do position previews, and we tier them. These are guys who may not make any of those tiers, but that might ought to be on your radar anyway. Guys who may be ranked 20th of that kind of range of their positions. So, you know, worth being aware of in deeper drafts, certainly be worth being aware of in single league drafts, but that, you know, we're not going to get to when we're talking about Bryce Harper or Manny Machado or Max Scherzer in a few weeks. So we will start at catcher. And I think it's fair to say that in recent, last couple years, catcher's been a really interesting fantasy position because I feel like it's been kind of condensed in some ways, that there aren't a whole lot of really high-end guys, and some of the high-end guys, nearly all of the high-end guys, have kind of come back to the field a little bit. But the floor is higher than it's been. There are a lot of reasonably good catchers. There are a lot of, and you'll see this when we start talking these names. So, you know, these are nearly all guys that, you know, as in a two-catcher league, in an AL or NL-only league, guys you're not going to mind having. So it's kind of an interesting position. So I think it's kind of who catches your eye, who you think is the best chance at lightning in a bottle. So the list that we have in front of us is Chris Iannetta, Tyler Flowers, Christian Vasquez, Stephen Vogt, and Yasmani Grandal. I have one guy on that list that I like a good bit more, but what do you think, Fred?
I'm interested in Iannetta just because of the Coors Field factor. He had a pretty solid season with the Diamondbacks last season. Now you put him at Coors. The Rockies, like, he can platoon with Tony Walters, although I could see Iannetta getting, like, working his way into a pretty heavy lead on that timeshare. So for that reason, I'm kind of intrigued by him, and I'm intrigued by Grandal. I'm worried about playing time, obviously, with Austin Barnes a lot, but there's a couple ways that Grandal, who clearly has a lot of power and can be a 20-25 homer hitter if he's their number one catcher, you know, if Barnes were to be injured, if Grandal were to be traded, there's ways for Grandal maybe to get playing time. Right now, he's really low on the list, but I could see a certain transactions could really jump him quickly. So those two kind of have my eye right now. How about you?
Yeah, Grandal's definitely the guy that intrigues me there. And as you note, the concern is playing time. But he to me, has the highest upside on that list. He's the guy. And I think, you know, when we're talking at this point, look, in some cases you will be needing, particularly if we're talking like an NL-only or AL-only league, then you are going to need that high floor. But in mixed leagues at this point, most of the time you're looking for ceiling rather than floor. And Grandal is the ceiling guy in this group to me. Is there a high floor guy in this group, you think? Is there a guy in this group that, you know, you need somebody that you just feel confident you can plug in and isn't going to hurt you out of this bunch?
Yeah, I kind of see two. So I agree with you on Grandal with the ceiling. And I think Iannetta for me a little bit is the floor as long, because just the Rockies and high-scoring games in Colorado and him playing in some of them, he'll get his counting stats. And to me, Flowers is also a pretty high-floor guy. I mean, he's had some stretches where he hit for power. He's had some stretches where he hit for average. But I see him as a fairly high floor as well.
Yeah, I agree. That's the guy that kind of jumps out to me. The one thing about Flowers' floor is that you know, playing time is going to be a real issue there. I mean, Chris Suzuki is going to play there. You know, Flowers is not likely to play 110, 120 games, never mind 140. You know, catchers don't play 140 in this era. But, you know, I don't think he's, you know, if you set an over-under for Flowers of 90 games, you know, I don't think that's unreasonable, and that would be my one concern with him. But, you know, when you plug him in, I think he'll hit.
Yeah, so I totally agree. I think he's the safest one, but, yeah, I just don't see a ton of upside there.
Again, we'll sort of play that same game, because I think that's a good way to approach it. First baseman, Ryan Healy, Greg Bird, Kendrys Morales, Justin Smoke, Chris Davis, Brandon Belt. For ceiling, I think the highest ceiling is Davis, just because it's a guy who's hit 50 in a season. But the guy who has the highest ceiling that I like the most to hit that ceiling, I think is Bird from this bunch. I won't be surprised if you argue Healy, and I'd hear you out. Who do you like for ceiling from that bunch?
Yeah, I agree with you on Bird. I think he's the guy who could hit the 30-plus home runs. I mean, he's in a really great lineup. I know what you mean with Davis. I'm just not sure we're going to see it again. Obviously, he has that ceiling of 50 homers, but I just don't really see it again. Bird, so I'll hedge myself right now and just say Bird, I think, has the highest ceiling, but without tipping my hand, he's not my favorite among this group. So if you were drafting right now, is Bird the one you would draft and chase that ceiling?
I think he is because – I not only like the ceiling, the performance floor is maybe questionable, but man, he's going to play in that lineup. And so even if he doesn't reach all of what he can be, they're going to be RBIs and runs for him.
For sure. I'll say that Healy's my favorite from the group.
Yep.
I didn't pick him for highest ceiling because you said I picked Bird because of that 30 or 35 homer potential. But with Healy, I think there's a nice mix of ceiling and floor where I think at worst he's basically what he was last season, which is pretty solid. The popular perception is he went to a better lineup with the Mariners. That may or may not be true because the A's were a decent lineup last season. But I do think the Mariners have the potential to be a significantly better lineup than the A's were last season. So there's some potential there for him to play the same but get you a few more counting stats. And I think he's still young enough that there is the potential for him to just improve on his own. So I like him as a high floor and kind of medium ceiling, whereas I don't see – I'm not in on Justin Smoke. I don't see Belt as having much ceiling at all, and kind of same thing with Morales.
I was about to ask you, what do we do with Brandon Belt in 2018? I mean, he has been almost certainly an underrated major league player, but at the same time has not become the fantasy producer, the big numbers producer that I think people hoped he would be. You still think there's sleeper potential there? You still think, because he's still relatively young, do you think that big year is still in there, or do you think that time has passed?
For me, I think it's passed. The concussions are also a concern with me. Just like I think that's going to be a major thing with him. Like you just never know when that could, something else could happen and that could creep in again. And I think he already missed a long time last season. I think the next one could be just as long or longer. And then you also put the home park and the Giants lineup not being especially productive. And to me, 10 and 12 team leagues, he's off your draft list. In a 15-team league, I think he's kind of your late-round guy. Like, if you're filling corner infield or utility near the end, not the end of your draft completely, but near, rounds 23, 24, I think that you can consider him. But if you said 20 homers this year, I'd take the under.
Yeah. Second base, Starlin Castro, Neil Walker, Joe Panik, Jonathan Villar, Brad Miller, Logan Forsyth. So you just have one pick. And you just know you're picking wherever you are, and you just are taking one of these guys, all things considered, first. Who do you like most, all things considered? Ceiling, chance to hit that ceiling, floor, all of it.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm actually going to say Forsyth. And I'm probably giving him a little too much credit, but Forsyth was quite good when he was with the Rays, and I was really optimistic about him with the Dodgers last season, and then it didn't turn out at all, and they used Chase Utley a lot. This, as you talk about how things can change, it's only January. If the Dodgers don't bring in competition for him at second base, I'm kind of interested in him as a possible bounce back where maybe he gets a heavy workload. He has hit leadoff a decent amount in his career, and he does what I expected him to do a year ago. I don't think he's the highest ceiling guy in the bunch, but I am intrigued by him.
Yeah, the case for him comes down to the opportunity, and do they do something to take opportunity away from him, or is he a guy we can really figure to get 500 or more plate appearances? And if he is, I agree. I mean, I like the player. I like the lineup. I think he's a really nice option if you're confident that they're not going to do something to eat into his playing time. The thing is, that's one of the things the Dodgers do. They're a little like the Cubs. They build in they build in backup plans, but that leads to redundancies, and that can lead to guys not playing every single day.
That's right. And I don't think Enrique Hernandez, because I know he's played some second, that I don't think he's a problem for Forsyth, because Forsyth's best against lefties, so it's Hernandez, so there's no platoon there. But if they bring in someone who's better against righties and lefties, now I'm concerned. I also want to note that Forsyth was really unlucky last year on batted balls, so I do think Just, and I know the Dodgers probably knew that as the season was unfolding, but it doesn't always impact the lineup card. If he just has a little better luck at the beginning of the season, that could turn everything around.
Starlin Castro, not in Miami. High floor guy, right?
Yeah. And even in Miami, I know he said he wants out, but even in Miami, he's still pretty much a high floor guy in the sense of if he's still with the Marlins, he should hit high in their lineup because they don't have a lot of other options. That gives them a lot of plate appearances and chances to score a run. So, yep, totally a high-floor guy. I think Neil Walker, although he gets hurt a lot, is a bit of a high-floor guy, too. He generally comes away with some counting stats during the season. And I also will throw out that I think in terms of ceiling, no one can touch VR. I mean, we're talking about someone who was picked in the second and third rounds last year, but he doesn't have a starting job. He has a platoon job in the short side of it right now. But if VR, but VR by far out of this group has the highest ceiling, because if he ever got that starting job back, you'd have maybe even a top, you'd have top four, top five base stealer in the majors.
And you can make a case that Miller's second on that list, right? I mean, that's a guy with big time power if it shows. I mean, you don't know if it's going to be there, but you know, that's the one guy out of that list that wouldn't shock you if he had a really big power season.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he should lead that, the group that we mentioned, he should lead that group in home runs. He just has to get the batting average back up. And and he's someone who was unlucky on batted balls last year, so it could just come up on its own.
Yeah. Third base is a really weird mix. Travis Shaw, Evan Longoria, Matt Chapman, Michael Franco, Jaime Candelario, J.P. Crawford. To me, the guy just, I don't know anything about my team. I don't know whether I need a lottery ticket or a safe. I don't know anything else, but who am I picking? I think I'm picking Shaw. Chapman for ceiling or Crawford? I'm not sure how high Crawford's big league ceiling is in 2018. Where do you put these guys?
Yeah, I'm probably picking Shaw. Franco's probably my second pick. I mean, he was...
Really?
Yeah, he was disappointing last year, but then when I really looked at the numbers, it was just really small drops kind of across the board. I'm not saying that he's about to become, like, an awesome third baseman, but even, like, I think everyone would say he was disappointing last year. There were still 24 home runs, 76 RBIs. Like, the year before, it was just 25 home runs. It was 88 RBIs. We talked a couple weeks ago about how the Phillies lineup could be a bit better this year. Like, if he hits a little better and the lineup's a little better, maybe you get 27 home runs and you're back up in the high 80s for RBIs. And once you're into your 20th third baseman, even as deep as the position is, that's not bad. So I think he's probably second for me. I'm just not totally ready to invest much in Chapman yet. And it's funny that we haven't mentioned Longoria at all. I think he's fine if you're in an NL-only league. In fact, maybe out of the whole group, I would take him in the NL-only league because I think he's the least likely to burn you. He's been really durable lately, and he's going to play. He's going to be fine. But the ceiling with him with the Giants, to me, is just really low.
Yeah, if you get late in an NL-only draft and somehow you say to yourself, oh, my goodness, I don't have a third baseman, then he's a pretty good pick because, like you know, he's going to play. But beyond that, I'm not really high on him going in next year. I just think general decline is about to have its way with him.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't think he's going to hit 15 home runs this season, but I think the odds of 15 are higher than the odds of him getting back up into the high 20s or into 30. So, and I threw J.P. Crawford on the list just because we talked about it a couple weeks ago. He's third base eligible at the start of the season. He'll add shortstop, obviously, at some point, but you were fairly optimistic on him, and more after that conversation, the more I looked into him, there are some things to like where I think fantasy owners in the deeper leagues shouldn't rule him out. He does a great job of drawing walks, so he's going to get on base. He showed some power in kind of the second half of his AAA season last year. Like, he started off so badly that the overall numbers are bad, but this is someone who's going to play every day and was a really touted prospect at one point very recently. So I do think there's a chance there that, you know, that you get 15 or 20 home runs, you know, in decent numbers the rest of the way. But he's at the back end of this group, but I don't think he's someone to ignore.
Right. And shortstop, and we'll talk outfielders next week, unless we talk pitchers next week. Ketel Marte, Asdrubal Cabrera, Addison Russell, Tim Beckham, Troy Tulowitzki. That's a pretty tasty group. The fact that these guys are sleepers tells you a lot about how deep shortstop is right now, I think. Russell, to me, is this really high ceiling, and I have almost no idea how likely he is to hit it. Beckham is a sneaky, interesting pick. Cabrera, the floor guy?
Yeah, I think Cabrera is the floor guy. Russell might even be a little bit the floor guy, just in the sense of, I think Russell might be the floor guy in the sense of, like, last year was a really bad year for him. He's probably not going to go any lower, and he still wasn't, like, he's still probably about as good as Cabrera last year.
Sure.
So he's probably the floor guy and probably the most exciting one from the bunch. And I agree with you on, I'm interested in Beckham too. I just think Baltimore, power hitter, a bit of a free swinger, well, quite the free swinger, but those players have had some success in Baltimore, and maybe get away from his overall contributions to a baseball team. Just from a fantasy perspective, maybe he just slugs his way to 25 or more home runs this year. And you're right about shortstop. I think that list of five shows that it's a pretty deep position right now. And the second base list wasn't bad either. There's not a lot of position scarcity out there right now. I know the corner infield's pretty deep, but there are decent options, as you can see here. Like when we're going around 20th, 22nd on these lists, that's the very end of your draft. And there's still some intriguing options even at those middle infield spots.
All right, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. We will be back again with you next week. Thanks, everybody, for taking the time to listen. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.